This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on the first day of October 2024, originating from the Investar Tower building in Baton Rouge. In just a bit, we'll hear from Terica Williams, and we start with Mary Stein, who is the person who is the voice and the face of the East Baton Rouge Parish Library, and what a smile she has. I've seen that smile since Jimmy Carter was president, and we were at Pentagon Cafeteria, and today is the 100th birthday of James Earl Carter, first president or vice president to make it to 100 years. He's in hospice care, but he's holding on, and he's a great American, and he's a son of the South, of course, and ran a long shot campaign in 1976, pulled it off, and between 1973 and 1993, actually between 1969 and 1993, 24 years, he was the only Democrat to serve in that 24-year period for 4 years and was roundly beaten by Ronald Reagan in 1980. But Jimmy Carter, for those who thought he was a good president and others who thought he was not a good one, he has been perhaps the greatest ex-president. He has been a person who has kept his passion and his intellect alive, and that's probably why he is still alive. He's kept that mind going, and that is a good way to segue to the East Baton Rouge Parish Library. Books are important in life, and the more we exercise our mind, just like the more we exercise our bodies, the better off we will be, and I think our chances of thwarting Alzheimer's are enhanced. Of course, we can't be for sure about that, but it's good to keep moving and to keep reading. And Mary Stein, as usual, has a full array of activities going on at the library. And part of civic engagement, of course, is voting, and the library is intricately involved in that. What's happening with voting as we approach an election 5 weeks from now?
Well, we have been registering people to vote during September, and we'll still keep having some voter registration events, and they'll be centered around the Bill of Obligations, the 10 Habits of Good Citizens. This is a series that we have created with our friends at LPB based on the book by Richard Haass, and copies are available, unlimited copies are available on eBooks, on Libby. And then we also have the companion documentary that aired on LPB last January, A Citizen's Guide to Preserving Democracy. I watched this and it struck me so much that I immediately called the station the next day and said, what do you have to go with this? Because we need to promote this. We need to engage in this. So what we've done is we've divided these. Basically, there are 10 Bill of Rights. We know that.
Right.
But the author, Richard Haass, says, well, you know what? You have a companion set of obligations that we need to do our part to keep democracy alive. So we've divided. Every Wednesday, we'll look at two of these obligations, and we'll be helped with some wonderful moderators from the community. You may have heard of them. Danny Heitman's going to help us. Ronnie Harris, the former mayor of Gretna, who is now calling Baton Rouge home. We're so fortunate. He's going to help us. Famin Roberts, who used to cover the paper and is now in the New Orleans area, who is fascinated by politics and civic engagement. He's going to help. And basically every Wednesday night we'll show the documentary at 6 if you haven't seen it, or you can stream it. Go to our info guide, and all the links are there. It's easy to get to. And then at 7 o'clock, we'll actually do a little work and talk about some of these obligations. The Sons of the American Revolution are going to come one time, and we're going to have tea just like the Patriots did so many years ago. We are, of course, also celebrating the opportunity for civic engagement with town meetings on really important topics during October and November, the plan of government, the jail, and Move BR. So we are a host for all of that.
877-217-5757 is your number. Mary Stein with us. She's talking about the Bill of Obligations. That's 7 to 8 every Wednesday night at the main library.
That's right.
And on Goodwood. And the first one is tomorrow. Be informed, get involved. Who's moderating that discussion?
That'll be Danny.
Danny, who we saw at the Founders Day luncheon.
Yes, we did.
His beautiful bride, Catherine, and Mary Stein, thank you for your participation as well and for your support.
Well, congratulations to you, Jim.
Well, thank you. I sure appreciate that. But it's every Tuesday, excuse me, Wednesday, every Wednesday in October, and there are five of them.
That's right. And, you know, we know with programs like this, sometimes people just read along from home, and that's fine. We're all about getting this thought out there because we crave civility in our civics.
Do we crave it?
I crave it.
You could have fooled me.
I crave it. So this may be one way to, you know, make a stab at getting a piece of civility back. We want to bring it back. So one of the best ways is to speak respectfully and listen respectfully to each other. So we'll put that into practice on Wednesday nights. Right. But there'll be so many other fun events going on at the library. We'll be murdering people with the premiere of the Marlowe Murder Club. This is going to air on, it's a BBC show. It's going to air on LPB later in the month, but we get to the sneak peek at it. We're having the fabulous Maker Fair.
That one is October 6th.
That's right. So coming right up. I've already read the book. The books are
in. That's this Sunday.
That's right.
What time?
We'll be there at 6:30. It'll start really at 7. And there are unlimited copies for you to download from Libby right now if you want to read ahead. I've read them all. They're fun.
Okay, that's the Marlowe Murder Club.
That's right.
Once again at the Main Library. Goodwood,
yeah, I'm kind of greedy that way. The Maker Fair is coming up, and we're going to make noise because music is our theme. So even if you don't have to be a musician to come. It's a family-friendly event. It lasts all day on Saturday, October 19th at the Main Library. And we will be having guests make instruments. You'll make instruments. We'll make noise. There'll be drumming. There'll be crazy things. Have you ever seen a musical instrument made out of a tape measure? I think not, but you will when you come.
All right. Well, you're covering a lot of ground. Yeah. I'm having trouble keeping up with you, but I know you've done this before, but this Boktoberfest, that's coming up soon and very soon, week from Friday.
That's right. The Baton Rouge Symphony Orchestra will be at the Main Library on
what time?
It'll start at 7, after hours event.
P.M.
That's right. So the music is free. The chairs cost a ticket price if you're going to get a symphony chair. Of course, the library has chairs. That's coming up. We do love to give the public opportunities to engage in cultural events like these free concerts, the Civic Orchestra, the Kids Orchestra, really fun, wonderful cultural events.
And the Book Festival, which is actually in November, but it's the first weekend in November.
That's right.
And Saturday is November 2nd, that's the Saturday before the election, and the book festival, which went away and came back, and I know Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser has been instrumental in that comeback, along with Jay Darden, and always great Louisiana writers and some from other parts of the world show up to be a part of this, and
it
takes over downtown, and I don't know of a better event in our community throughout the year.
It's a wonderful way to spend the day. There'll be hundreds of authors. We will, of course, be there. We like to bring some surprises. And there's even going to be a bookmobile roundup. All the other parishes are like, well, we want to come too. So we'll see.
A listener asks about your One Book, One Community selection. And when do you make that choice? When do you announce it?
Oh, I've made the choice.
But when do you announce it?
We may announce it at the book festival.
Why don't you announce it right now? Can we get initials?
Sure. J.M.
J.M.?
Yes.
There are a lot of J.M.'s out there.
Yeah, well.
But you did tease us.
That's right. And come to the book festival and you'll
find
out
which J.M. we're talking
about.
That's
right.
Really?
Good.
J.M., okay.
Yeah, and I'll be asking you to participate in a larger way for this one because of the theme.
Okay. You've teased me, and I have no idea what Mary's talking about, but anything she's involved in, I'm eager to be a part of. And what about Attic Treasures and Collectibles? That's the last Saturday of this month, October 26th.
Yes, and that's where you bring three things from your closet or your attic, and local experts and Some are really fine experts, and some just handle a lot of goods and they know a lot of stuff. So they'll be there to help us identify what you've brought and maybe give you a loose evaluation. To me, the most important thing is they tell me how to clean it or how not to clean it. Because, you know, when you watch Antiques Roadshow and they say, if only you hadn't polished it. So we want to stop you from making those dreadful mistakes and then find out what you have and what it might have been used for. People bring the most amazing things. It's one of the most fun events we do. I just walk around the room and look and see what people brought.
And we're short on time, but I looked in your latest issue of The Source, and this is included. A listener asked about birds of the world.
It's brand new. Oh, it's so cool. We have so many people who love nature in Louisiana. We are the bird sportsman's paradise, but we have birders all over the place.
Birders. And so we got murders and birders at the library.
That's right. So we have a new database that will help you quickly identify these birds because you can't lug that 20-pound book with you.
All right. Well, Mary, we'll see you next month. Have a great October and a great September. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing, and we're joined in studio by Terica Williams. She is the constable. She has, I believe, more than 30 years in law enforcement, working with the East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's Office for more than 20 years, and then with the constable's office. And 4 years ago, she was elected, winning in a runoff. Trey Bargas, I believe, was her opponent, and she got 57% of the votes, and she won, and now she is in a race, and this one will be determined in the primary because there are only two candidates, and it will have a high turnout 5 weeks from now. It is the presidential election day, and her opponent is a person well-known to Baton Rouge, former Metro Council person and current state representative, C. Denise Marcel. She was with us last week, and Tara is with us now. Now, Denise has noted that she has the support of the former constable, Reggie Brown. But, Terica, I know you have some endorsements as well. And in the attempt to be fair, I think you probably should name some of the people who are backing you and your quest to win a second term.
Okay, good morning. And thank you for the invite this morning. Yes, I do have a lot of support, and I'm thankful for my support. Of course, I've been endorsed by AFL-CIO. I have the endorsement of the Democratic Party. I have endorsements from most of our council members. I was like the council members that serve in the council. I have most of their support. I have pastors that has come out and publicly endorsed me. So I have a lot of endorsements, and I'm appreciative of that.
Well, the AFL-CIO and the Democratic Party are the two big ones, and you're running against a fellow Democrat and a person who is popular in this community, and obviously you are too. You won, but it is a race, and it is a contested race. How's it looking?
It's looking good, and I love it because I'm everywhere. And a lot of people tell me, well, why don't you sit down? You're doing too much. And I was like, you can never do too much in an election. But the talk, the people in the street, the chatter, the people who have to vote for you are really talking positive talk, and I'm just excited to make it to November the 5th.
Why do you view this position, which some people have very little knowledge about, as being important in our community?
You know, that's a question. That's a good question because we've all tried to figure it out. At one time, Reginald Brown, who was a great constable, when he left, you heard about the constable's office, but not as much. But now that I'm in the position, I make sure that the constables are known for the work that they have to do. They are post-certified police officers. They serve our community. And my motto is protect and serve and service above and beyond. So we do a lot in the community. And I guess because I'm showing the people who the constables are, then now they see what the position is.
Well, when Representative Marcel was on this show last week, she noted that it has 37 employees. So it is a rather big office. And I would imagine those 37 people who work for you are people you have chosen for various reasons. Why does somebody come to work for a constable?
Well, see, when I came to the constable's office years ago, it was a good position. It was the best kept secret in law enforcement. We work Monday through Friday. We're off on weekends. We're off on holidays. But we still do the same police work that everybody else do. It's a great agency. And, of course, working for the city of Baton Rouge has great benefits. And you have to love law enforcement to want to be in law enforcement. You have to have a passion, and it's in your heart. you can hear people say, well, somebody told me to do it. It's not because somebody tell you to do it. It has to be what's in your heart. And because of what's in my heart, that's why I've been in law enforcement so long. And I have great employees. I do. The constable's office here in Baton Rouge is the largest in the state of Louisiana. We have the most employees. Most times you have constables, you have ward constables, you have marshals in smaller areas. But here in Baton Rouge, we have the largest constable's office. And we do have 37 deputies, but we have 7 civilian employees as
so
well.
So you got 44 employees, I guess.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. But, of course, there's a whole lot going on, and a lot of it's not pleasant. And this job is not what I would consider a glamour position. But you have grown up in this community, mm-hmm. went to McKinley, and graduated Glen Oaks High School,
sir.
Right?
So, yes, sir.
So you know a lot about our community, and how is it out there on the streets right now?
Well, I was actually talking with some folk yesterday, because even when we're interviewing now, and law enforcement across the nation, it's like it's at a time where we can't even get employees, anybody to want to work in law enforcement. And law enforcement is not a bad job. When you go in the streets, of course, for me, it's not bad because I know everybody. I try to communicate with everybody, and I try to treat everybody fairly. But we can't, like yesterday, I was in a grocery store, and I was talking to a guy, and he said, I'm glad you had your son with you. He said, because had you been by yourself as a police officer, I probably would have looked at you differently. He said, my son was killed, and the police officers didn't do what they were supposed to do. And I said, sir, I say all officers are not bad. We have a lot of good police officers. So once the public and the community can see that we are good people, I think they'll start respecting us more.
You ever have any problems when somebody's served with some papers they don't like?
Well, I always tell the story. When I first walked into office, I had two of my guys out serving papers, and there was a young man who had warrants for his arrest, and they were trying to just talk to him more than anything. And I could hear them over the radio, and they were frantic on the radio saying, you know, we need help, we need backup. So I get on the radio, and I'm like, this is CE1. I need everybody responding until they go code 4. But, of course, CE1 is out riding. I'm in uniform, and I'm ready to work every day. So I ride up on the scene, and I pull up, and my guys out there, they were going in a circle, and the guy was in the middle, and the two officers was, like, walking around trying to figure out how can we get him to comply. So I walk up, and I say, sir, listen to me. I say, you need to comply with those officers. Well, what you want me to do, ma'am? I said, I need you to calm down. I said, and I promise you, if you haven't done anything wrong, you will not go to jail, but at least allow them to do their job. So he calmed down, and all it took was just one person to walk up and isolate the situation and calm it down.
Well, you obviously like your job, but you did draw a formidable opponent. Were you surprised Representative Marcel ran against you?
Yes, I was. I was. Actually, Representative Marcel supported me in my last election, and even when the announcement came out, I received a text of a social media post that she posted saying that I was the best person for the position and congratulating me in 2018. And I don't know what happened.
Well, I had Greg Merriweather on this show, this old Street Beat guy who is now the primary anchor at Channel 9. I asked him if he turned the other way when Sylvia Weatherspoon, his counterpart at Channel 2, was in his orbit. He said, no, they're the best of friends. When you and Cindy, Denise Marcel are in the same room, do you look the other way?
No, actually, we had a forum last week, and of course, Rep. Marcel was saying that she know how to find money because she's in the legislation, and she knows how to find money to help rebuild. And I even offered, I said, well, I don't mind working with you to rebuild the city jail, which was a concern of hers that the city jail was not being utilized. And as I explained to her, the city jail is it's the oldest jail in the state of Louisiana, and it's under the city court building. So in order to redo the city jail, you would probably have to tear city court down to rebuild it. So I'm willing to work with our state representative to find funding to help redo the jail.
Well, what do you view as the primary duty of your job?
My duties, the primary duty of the constable is mainly to protect and serve Baton Rouge City Court. We serve bench warrants. We serve civil subpoenas. We serve civil mandates. We do evictions. We do garnishments. We have a large bench warrant department. My job is to make sure all of this is being carried out in the proper manner so that everybody is safe and everybody is being treated fairly.
It's a job that I guess would not be for everybody, but you have, as I stated, you didn't get just any opponent. You got a very strong opponent who would be giving up her legislative seat to serve as constable. And so there is some attraction to this position. You worked for Reggie Brown.
Yes, sir.
And what was your impression of the way he ran the office?
Well, I worked for Reggie Brown. Coming from the sheriff's office, it was totally different. We were like family.
At the
sheriff's office, yeah. Yes, sir. We looked out for each other. I worked under Elmer Litchfield, and then I worked under Sid Gautreaux.
A little bit under Greg Ferries, too.
Yes.
A little bit.
Yes, under Greg Ferries. So coming to the constable's office was different. It was a piece for me because of the hours. I was able to work straight mm-hmm. days and not shift work. Reggie Brown was a great leader. I can't take that from him, but the agency had some things that needed to be changed.
And what did you change?
When I walked in the doors, I noticed that constables had equipment that was outdated. They had radios that didn't work. They had tasers that didn't work. They had weapons that didn't work. They were the lowest paid constables in the state of Louisiana. So I was able to go in, and as of today, constables have received an 11% pay increase. They have new equipment. We've been able to purchase new weapons. We've been able to purchase new tasers, laptops, and radios for everybody.
All right, hold that thought. We'll spend a few more minutes with Terica Williams. If you'd like to get in under the wire, 877-217-5757. Back after this time out on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. And, of course, 5 weeks from the election, you'd like to get under the wire with Terica Williams, the constable. 877-217-5757. She's being opposed by C. Denise Marcel, a spirited matchup of two Democrats who both want this job that was held for many years by Reginald Brown. And your number, again, 877-217-5757. And Sam in Goodwood asks about the budget, and that's something that you and I talked about. How is the budget as far as the necessity of doing the job, and have you been a profligate spender, or are you somebody who pinches pennies? We're somewhere in between, Terica.
Well, I pinches pennies, but as I tell the story, when I walked in, I walked into a deficit, a major deficit. And I don't tell the story to make the previous constable look bad. It's just to show the community what I've done with what I had. I've been able to get the budget up to $4 million. It was about $2.5 million when I walked in. And when you look back at the history of the constable's office, the budget has always been $2 million. And it's been going up since I've been in the position. This year alone, we've been able to get our budget up to $4 million. And with that, you can keep great employees. You can make sure the employees are being treated fairly and making the money that they should make to do the jobs that they do in our community.
Again, 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Makia in Sherwood. Makia, you're on Talk Louisiana with Terica Williams.
Good morning, Eastern. How are y'all doing?
Fine. What's your question, Makia?
My question is about the turnovers. I was calling to find out why the constable office is currently going through high turnover rate.
High turnover rate. She says there are a lot of people coming and going. Is that a correct assessment?
Yes, and I can answer that question. With the constable's office, it's a smaller agency. We only have 44 employees. When you walk into an agency, most times you have employees who have already been there for so many years. We had one person who was there 40 years, so of course they're entitled to retire when they get to a retirement age. Even when I walked into the constable's office, I walked into four lawsuits that were not my lawsuits, but they were there before I made it to the office. So when you walk in and you're dealing with some things that were already a problem, and you have to continue to try to figure out how to fix it. But if you can't fix it, then those people are free to go. And if you check in the nation, with law enforcement, there's a shortage in law enforcement. We have the city police. We have the sheriff's office. We have other agencies that are going through the same thing with employees not wanting to work in law enforcement.
The mayor's election, of course, is the talk of the town. What are your thoughts about what's going on as Sharon Weston Broome seeks another term?
Well, I did receive calls from both candidates, and because I'm in my race, I try to stay out of other people's business, and I say I'm going to stay over here in the constable's race, and I have to stay neutral in that particular race.
Well, you don't have to, but it's probably politically a wise thing to do. But but I mentioned turnout. There would be high turnout if it were only the presidential election. We really get juiced up about presidential elections in Louisiana, but you got a mayor's race in this race also, so there are a whole lot of voters out there who probably will only vote once and then maybe not for the next 4 years. Yes. So how do you appeal to people who maybe are not as engaged in something like this, who may nonetheless still, as they are constitutionally allowed, cast a ballot and they have no idea who they're voting for or against?
Yes, yes. And that's a good thing, because I always tell the story, as a young girl, I used to vote just because it was my right to vote. And I never studied the candidates until I was older and I learned, you know what, even voting for the wrong candidate is just like not voting. So now I ask people, please make sure and learn the candidates, know who you're voting for before you cast the vote, so you can have the right people in the positions. Even in 2018, when I ran for office, we had a small ballot. We didn't have much on the ballot, but I'm thankful that the people went out and 57% of the people voted for me, because I pushed, I educated the people, and I was everywhere making sure people knew to go out and vote for the right person.
Randy and Zachary. Randy, you are on Talk Louisiana.
My question is, would you please explain to your audience what are your plans for the future with the constable's office? Because every time I engage with you and members of your office, I find nothing but professionalism. In my personal opinion, I could only think that things would go up. But would you please explain to us what your vision is?
Yes, sir. And Randy, I thank you for your question. I do plan to continue to move this agency forward. Most importantly, bringing it to the 21st century, to where they have equipment and they can be professional. Most times when you don't have the equipment you need, you're not making any money, you don't treat people fairly. And I'm hands-on. I'm open door transparency. My door is always open. I'm at work every day, and I'm willing to work with my constables to make sure we're doing a great job. So moving forward, my goal would be continue to train, get training, because training is important, making sure that they have the equipment they need, and making sure that they're treated fairly, just like every other police department, so we can be who we are.
Jack downtown asks if this is the last job you'll seek, or will you try to seek other offices as your opponent has?
No, Jack, I promise. Jack, I want to continue to be the constable for as long as I can. Reginald Brown did it for 18 years. And actually, I'm the youngest constable in the history of the agency. So I plan to be there a long time. I love what I do. I love my agency, and it's a passion for me. So, no, I don't want to go anywhere else. I would not be going into no other lanes besides the constable's office.
Dr. Homer in Melrose. Dr. Homer, you are on with Terrica Williams.
Good. Thank you, Jim. Good morning, Ms. Terrica Williams. How are you doing? I had a brief question. With the city vehicles, the constable's office vehicles, is there a policy that restricts use outside of the city parish itself? Are these vehicles able to go anywhere outside of the city parish on official business?
Dr. Homer, hi. I'm great. Thanks for that question. Yes, if we're going out of the parish on business or doing police officer work, we can most certainly take the vehicles out of the parish.
But if you're going to New Orleans for a weekend, can you do it then too?
No, sir.
No.
I'm
glad to hear that.
Yes, if we're going for business purposes, we can do it. But personal use, we don't suggest to do that.
Well, we wish you well, and as we do your opponent. And it is a spirited race between two good people, and we'll see which one wins. But okay. That's what politics is all about.
Yes.
Thanks for coming in today,
okay,
Terrica Williams.
And
either way, we look forward to having you back. Go ahead.
Okay, and one last thing. I am Terrica Williams. Of course, I'm the city constable up for re-election. I'm number 67 on the ballots, and I just ask everybody to keep me in mind when it's time to vote on November the 5th.
All right, there you go. 5 weeks from today. And today, I'm really surprised this wasn't front page of the Baton Rouge Advocate, the death of Nick Abraham. He was a force of nature, big part of this community, and certainly cultivated media attention with his flamboyant personality. And this is how it reads on page 2B of, or it's actually the front page, but it has two paragraphs on the front and then goes to 2B. A Baton Rouge man was found dead, his body rolled in a tarp and left alongside a road in Tangipahoa Parish on Sunday. The body of William Abraham, that's Nick Abraham, 69, found on the side of Louisiana 51 between Fluker and the village of Tangipahoa shortly before 8 o'clock. Sunday, when a passerby reported it to law enforcement, Abraham died of blunt force trauma. the Tangipahoa Parish Coroner's Office. And he was on this show many times, although not so much of late, and I kind of regret that because he was a good guest, and he was unafraid to express his opinion. And he was on this program and actually announced that he was gay. He came out on this program, and he preached, and he was a former priest, inclusion and tolerance. And Robin Dow, let's go. I think we've got a bit of a sampling of the words of wisdom from Nick Abraham, who died tragically this weekend, and hopefully the person of interest, who is a suspect in this case, will be found, and we will find out what exactly happened in his untimely death.
With immense respect for what's going on tomorrow, and I'm speaking now more as from a counselor position, I have the feeling that this may be more of a fear rally. And I think that the prayer of fear is real. When I'm afraid, I pray. But I also think that sometimes we need to move beyond fear to invocation of, again, other virtues like courage and acceptance and patience. It just seems like there's a lot of fear driving it, Jim. And I could be wrong, but that's my take. We're afraid of gays. We're afraid of this. We're afraid of that. This country is changing drastically, and I think for the better.
That was Nick Abraham, and he died tragically. At that time, he was talking about, that was 2015. It was shortly before the ascension as a political force of Donald Trump, but there was an anti-gay rally at LSU, I think put on by the American Family Association. We also lost Pete Rose yesterday. And for those of us who grew up of a certain vintage, Pete Rose's career spanned from 1963 to 1986 in the major leagues. He played for three World Series champions, 75-76 with the Reds and 1980 with the Phillies, the team I've rooted for since I was a little kid. And Pete Rose had more hits, 4,256, than anybody else in the history of the game. He played more games, had more at-bats, and he never let down. Every play was at fever pitch for the man from Cincinnati who died in Las Vegas, 83 years old. I met him a few years ago in Las Vegas, and it happened to be on the day in which baseball announced that it was not going to allow him to be eligible for the Hall of Fame. And he did gamble on games, purportedly never against his own team, but bet for his own team, which is a real no-no, and in the overall scheme, a much bigger offense than steroid use. But he was one of the greatest players in the history of the game, and he helped the Phillies win it all in 1980. They had great teams from 76 to 83, but only won one World Series title, and Pete Rose was a big part of that, and he made Mike Schmidt a greater player. He played with 13 Hall of Famers himself, with three different teams, and he said that Mike Schmidt was the best player he ever played with, and Pete Rose is gone at 83. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. I'm sure many were listening last Friday when James Carville was a guest, and a caller asked him about what's going on in Lafayette, where that city, which is a great American city and a Louisiana treasure, it has become a conservative bastion, and it is a place that has elected as its congressman several times now, Clay Higgins, who is, of course, one of the more conservative members of the U.S. House of Representatives. And James Carville responded this way about the evolution of Lafayette.
Southwest Louisiana was, when I was young, was a refreshing bastion of tolerance. People don't realize that. There were two blacks on the Crowley City Council in 1954. The university in Lafayette was integrated in the 50s. No one said anything. Remember when James Meredith went to Ole Miss and everybody
got killed.
Had a collective hissing fit? People got killed. Cajuns didn't care. And somehow or another, and this is, to me, in my mind, it's a tragedy, Southwest Louisiana started to dislike people. And what, you know, I'm pretty, was Catholic through, educated, I'm steep, but I'm pretty knowledgeable of Catholic theology. That is probably the most un-Catholic thing you could imagine anybody saying in your life.
All right, that's James Carville commenting about what's happened in Lafayette. And in Louisiana, this used to be a blue state, and Baton Rouge was a red city. Now Baton Rouge is blue, and the rest of the state, or most of it, with a few exceptions like New Orleans, is red. And so Donald Trump gets about 80 to 85% of the white vote, and only about 5% of the black vote in Louisiana. And because there are more whites than blacks, he gets about 58%. And that will likely be the case 5 weeks from now. And I noted that, I think somebody brought it up, it was mentioned that Clay Higgins had been a supporter of David Duke, and he had. And Duke, in the year of 1991, received 671,009 votes. So a lot of people voted for him. And many of those people are still voting, and I think it would be a stretch to say every one of them is a racist. Also, everybody who voted for Edwin Edwards is not enlightened. Some of those people are racist, too. But Lulu Schutz, an accomplished chef who grew up in Baton Rouge, has lived in New Orleans the last 7 years, wrote me a letter, and it was heartfelt. And I'm a sucker for good writing, and she wrote very well. And she says, if a person supports a racist, they are also racist. And then she continues, Jim is more afraid of pissing off a white listener who supports racism than standing up for what is moral and right. And I think, Lulu, you make a point, of which I do disagree, but I do think that sometimes people's opinions, their thoughts, their philosophy, their prejudices, They're exercised at the ballot box, but it is a complex thing when somebody votes or doesn't vote or votes one way or another. And I would love to hear more of your perspective on why you believe that it is impossible to say vote for Clay Higgins and also be enlightened on anything involving inclusion. After all, this is a congressman who just called for basically all people from Haiti who now live in Springfield, Ohio, to get the hell out of there. What are your thoughts, Lulu? And good to have you with us, by the way.
Thank you for having me, Jim. I'm a longtime listener, a big fan of yours. And I do agree that we live in a world of nuance. But when we go to the ballot box, we cast our vote. Each of us are choosing someone who aligns with our moral code and our vision for life. We're never going to find the perfect candidate, but you do choose the person who aligns with you the most. And Clay Higgins has a long history of being a violent bigot. You know, in 91, the first of his three ex-wives sought a protective order against him for putting a gun to her head and threatening to murder her. He called David Duke, and this is on record in the paper, his homeboy. And in that same sentence, acknowledged that he understands that he is a neo-Nazi, a leader of a hate terrorist group. So even without the nasty things he says about legal immigrants in this country, basically threatening them to get out of this country before January, he has a long history of being racist. And we have all heard the phrase, birds of a feather flock together. You are the company you keep. And if racism and violence isn't a deal breaker, if you can vote for a man who beat an unarmed black man who was handcuffed, lied about it, then another cop ratted him out and then says, oh, yeah, you know what, I did do that.
All right, well, hold your fire for just a moment. And I would say that if Representative Higgins wishes to appear on our show and counter any of this, and he, I would suspect, has a different point of view, he is welcome to do so. But I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of Lulu. As you can hear, she expresses herself extremely well. And these allegations about Higgins have been, they have been unearthed in other places. But the people of Lafayette, now when you go to that city, it is a marvelous place, and the people are kind. And I'm sure many of them voted for Clay Higgins. Now, could it be out of ignorance? Could it be out of the fact that they believe that a politician does makes good votes on other things, independent of what you just talked about? Could it be things beyond whether they are a racist or a bad person? They just like the way they vote. Is it possible that that's the case?
There's four different types of racism, right? There's internalized, there's interpersonal, there's institutional, and there's structural. So we all have things that we have to unpack within ourselves, messaging that we grew up with. And you can say, I don't hate people of color, and mean that full-heartedly, and don't think you have a racist bone in your body. But we have to understand that we have grown up, especially in South Louisiana, which I've been here my whole life. My family has been here for 102 years. Racism is still very much prevalent. And there is messaging all around us that shows us that. And it is up to each of us to unpack our own internal implicit bias. And so it doesn't mean that that's the whole of who a person is and that they have to hate Black people. But it does mean that it's not a deal breaker for you. If you're voting for a known racist, a supporter who has homeboys that are Nazis, that's not a deal breaker for you. Then there needs to be some self-evaluation about what you need to unpack about your own internal racism, because it does exist. Doesn't mean that's the only thing about you, but it is there.
Right. Well, sometimes people do change. Harry Truman, now regarded as one of the great American presidents, was a Klansman at one time. Jimmy Carter, whose 100th anniversary of his birth, and he's alive and well, not so well, but alive at 100 today. He was a segregationist, but he changed. Is it possible to change? Or if you're a racist or a prejudiced person or a segregationist, you're tarred forever. How do you view that, Lulu?
Oh, I definitely believe that people change. And I would love to see a change in Southern Louisiana in the hearts of people. And I love that you bring up Jimmy Carter. I'm actually a big fan of Jimmy Carter, so I didn't realize his birthday. Happy birthday, Jimmy Carter. But one of my favorite quotes from his is, I hate to see complacency prevail in our lives when it's so directly contrary to the teaching of Christ. So I would gather to venture that most of the people that are voting for Clay Higgins consider themselves followers of Christ. There is nothing Christ-like about that man's actions. Nothing. And so if Jesus is the light and the way of your life, and you are going to the ballot box, and you are cashing your vote for Trump, or I would even say John Kennedy, or, you know, Clay Higgins, you are not living in your own values. And that's right. Really sad.
Well, let's take a call or two. And Lulu is very good. We hope to have you back. I love your passion. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on with Lulu Schutz.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Lulu. Just a question. I'm from Opelousas, which that's all merged. I like first cousins. Opelousas, Lafayette, it's all like first cousins. The thing is this. Sometimes Clay don't know what he is part of. Lafayette is host to one of the biggest world music festivals in the country. From Haiti to South Africa to Russia to Arneville, let's just face it. And it's representative of that. It's one of, and get treated great festival. So sometimes I think he is just selling himself. Let's just face it. A politician sometimes will tell you what he needs to hear to all you, what you need to hear just to get in office.
All right, is Clay Higgins playing to the lowest common denominator, or is this the real Clay Higgins, Lulu, based on what you have unearthed?
I would say both and.
Okay.
This is who he is, and he's willing to play to the lowest common denominator because he lacks moral fortitude.
Well, and I don't think he's a dummy either. People have said he's not smart. I think he knows exactly what
he's
doing.
Racism is stupid.
Racism is, but it's stupid on a different level than being intellectually inferior. And I don't think Clay Higgins is a dumbass, but he says some dumb things. I agree with you. And thank you for joining us today. And we'll hopefully have Lulu back. And we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.